Welcome to the Life, Success, and Legacy podcast. We're glad you're here, and we hope you enjoy the episode.
Hey, everybody. We want to welcome you back to the Life, Success, Legacy podcast. I'm Chris Bay, and I'm joined by two of our mics today, Mike Crawford and Mike Kwong. How are you, mics?
All right.
Our third mic is off on a trip with his wife, Linda. They're actually down in your neck of the woods, Mike Kwong, down in Houston visiting some family. So you may want to be a little extra, take a little extra care on the highways down there if Mike Everett's driving. So you guys both just got back from trips as well. Mike Kwong, let's start with you. Give us a little highlight from your trip. What was the purpose?
Yeah, sure. We went on a East Coast college tour for Jackie, our daughter, and we hit five campuses. We planned on four, and then the last bit, we hit Columbia up in New York City. We watched, you know, a Broadway play. She loves the musicals. And we hit Hopkins, Georgetown, Penn, Princeton, and then Columbia. So,
And yet, show us what you're representing there. Kind of,
I'm telling you, this is where she should go. It's already just
as an alumni, do you get some kind of discount on tuition?
Are you kidding? As an alumni, I'm expected to pay more in donations. <You kidding?
laughs> Yeah.
But it was a good trip, but it's good to be back.
Good. And we're narrowing down the options down to what, a dozen or so?
No. About six.
So. Down to half dozen. Okay, good. I remember that process. Those, for our listeners who maybe haven't been through this process, at least our experience, on-campus visits are critical.
Oh, absolutely.
You cannot replace on-campus visits. You just get an entirely different feel. So that's my recommendation. And MC, Michael Crawford, you guys had a big trip across the pond. Tell us about that.
We did. Took my father-in-law on his, and it was ours too, first international trip to Ireland, and spent 10 days driving around on the wrong side of the road in Ireland, and had a great time. Got to see lots of cool countryside. The ocean was cold. Rode a ferry out to an island. It was great. We had a lot of experiences that I think will go down as top tier for a long time.
Yeah. And this was kind of a bucket list thing for your father-in-law, right?
Yeah. Paul, hasn't been on an airplane since 1971. That was when he got off of the plane for his last day in the military. And he told me when I first started dating Mary, which has been almost 21 years ago now, he said, if God wanted me to fly, he'd have given me wings. And so... For him sounds to bridge like the gap to go from, I'm never flying to, hey, let's go to Ireland on a 10-hour flight was huge. But, I think he probably will talk about this for the remaining years he has, which I hope are a lot, but I guarantee it will be a topic every time we meet.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Both great experiences and... Yeah, that's fantastic. Thanks for sharing that, you guys.
Yeah.
So today, our topic is going to be a little bit about the ratio of base premium and PUA, and for a variety of reasons, actually. One of the reasons is we, as a team, had a discussion here in the last week, really digging into... we have some clients who they've max funded their base and their PUA, and with some companies they allow you to overfund the PUA. The way we design it, typically we're already bumping up against that MEC line, right? Mm-hmm. We've pushed as much towards base and PUA without creating a taxable event, which is the modified endowment contract. Mm-hmm. For some of our clients, they were wanting to see, can I push even more into it? Yeah. And then it becomes this kind of back and forth with the life insurance companies. And Mike Crawford, in your critical thinking, as we were talking through, we went through a problem-solving process. In your critical thinking, you kind of back the bus up and took our conversation another direction, which I thought was really, really a great example of the different skill sets of our team and what we bring to it. And what got us thinking about, again, is this ratio between base and PUA, and what is the purpose of the PUA? What are the benefits of it, and what are the limitations?
Yeah.
And just to frame all of this and take it back to Nelson's principles, you know, Nelson told us, number one, think long term, right? He told us to capitalize generously. Don't be afraid to capitalize. Capitalize generously, just meaning put as much in as you can into your system of policies. And be an honest banker. In Nelson's terms, don't steal the peas, right? Those are the top three. There's a couple others. Rethink your thinking and don't do business with banks, right? But those top three that have been kind of the original, the OG principles, think long term, capitalize generously, be an honest banker.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have this conversation with those principles in mind, okay? And then some other things that play into it. So let's talk about, in my estimation, Nelson, one of his contributions to the world is rethinking his thinking around life insurance and banking and bringing in the PUA as a tool, right? Let's talk a little bit about what are the pros and the cons. What was the intention of the PUA? What are the limitations of the PUA? Someone want to jump in on that?
Sure, I'll start. The way, you know, PUA works, I mean, it's literally stands for, so for folks that don't know, it's paid up addition, right? As you pay into a premium, or, you know, into a policy, each premium pays up a portion of the policy's capacity or ultimate, you know, size, if you would, with death benefit. The PUA affords you additional paid up insurance, death benefit, right? That's where it first goes to. And as if anyone's talked to me, that, you know, right, the cash values related, you know, inextricably with that death benefit and will grow actuarially or mathematically. So the PUA is there, and cash value is equity in the policy. Don't forget. So one example I often use is when you buy a PUA or use PUA and add your cash value to it, it's like buying equity in your mortgage, buying down points, maybe, right? Some people think that makes sense. But for a lot of folks that are building it out, they want that cash value. And the PUA is the primary way in the beginning, certainly the first year, to kind of jumpstart that.
Yeah, I think to carry on with that, like, I look at it as a tool that Nelson discovered that existed already, you know, within the design of the whole life policy. It was a rider, you know, which is an add-on to the base of the policy. And that rider, that add-on, allows us to inject that equity a little bit more on the front end. You know, we've talked about this in the past. A traditional policy is all base. All base, right. But it's all death benefit. All death benefit provides some cash value, but it takes, I'm going to use a general number, 10 to 15 years for it to build up usable cash value. Now, if you didn't care anything about the cash value, that's cool. Buy your base, move on with life, at least it's whole life insurance, and you're covered forever. If you want to use your policies the way Nelson has taught us, and, you know, the way that we teach our clients how to do it, the paid up additions is the tool, that add-on that we use to hitch on the side of that policy and create the immediate or more immediate cash equity in the policy, so that we can teach people in most cases how to turn the wind current, which leads us to why we design policies the kind of the way we do, Chris.
Yes. Yeah. So with both of you and your comments, it takes me back to the dream conversation and why we implemented that years ago. And Jeff King on our team is a master at doing the dream conversations for us. Shout out to Jeff. The dream conversation, the reason we put that in place is because we need to know what the goal is of our clients. What are they trying to accomplish, right? So IBC does four things, and we always ask people, which is most important to you today? Is it eliminating outside debt rapidly? Well, if that's the goal, we tend to go with that 40-base, 60-PUA design because we get a little bit more cash value early on without running into too much mech issues down the road if we're smart and we manage the policy correctly, right? But we can get, you know, if you compare like a 40-60 split to a 50-50 split on a, let's just say a $10,000 policy, you might get an extra $1,000 in available cash value or loan value in that first 2 weeks. Well, that can sometimes turn the wind current on a credit card or two, right? Something. And so that is beneficial. So the very first thing, eliminating outside debt, if that's their goal, we may be looking, depending on all factors considered, we may be looking at a more aggressive policy like a 40-base, 60-PUA. Number two is building a pool of capital that you get three uses of every dollar that you run through your banking system that you can leverage for whatever you want, new purchases, vacations, tuition, investments, et cetera, right? Again, depending on all factors considered, the 40-60 might make sense, but it may make more sense to go more with a 50-50 split and thinking more long-term. Why is that? We'll get into that. The third option is passive income, okay? If passive income is their goal, again, thinking of all variables, the design will have an element. And then lastly, the tax-free wealth transfer, the death benefit. Yeah. So that dream conversation is so important to know what the goal is of the client. And as we often say, the goals of the client may change. The circumstances may change over time, right? Mike Kwong, can you give us an example of a client where maybe when you first started having conversations, their goals were this, but then over a relatively short amount of time, things changed and now their goals have shifted to something else?
Sure. I guess a lot of folks come to IBC, right? And like you said, they start with the debts to pay off, right? And this progresses where we'll build out the policy. You can knock out some of this debt, get that under control. And then, you know, the anniversary or you know, after a few years, they've got that under control. What else can they do, right, with the policy? Then it shifts towards, you know, that third prong you were saying, maybe build passive income. Right, taking that cash value instead of just paying down expensive outside debt, turning the wind current, maybe starting to build something positive on the long term. Right, so there's an example of where you know your needs may change over time, and your structure of the policy should kind of reflect that, right? But also be built with that long term focus in mind, because there's a lot of things that we can take care of in the meantime. And maybe a little bit faster with a more aggressive build, but down the road, sometimes you don't think about how it may limit the potential for the policy or your options if you limit it too much, right? Or go too aggressive.
Right. Mike Crawford, with you and Mary and your family, have you seen your goals change over the years you've been involved with IBC?
Yeah, you know, when you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed in IBC and the way I am with like my similarities with Mike Everett is, you know, we jumped in head first and Mary was still pretty apprehensive, right? And I've told that story a few times, but, you know, we've talked pretty extensively about how we want to expand our system. And I'm, you know, based on even just some recent illustrations that we've ran and the policy that we bought a couple of years ago on me, I guess we bought one on her too, were designed more towards a 50-50 split instead of the 40-60. And some of that had to do with the fact that in the 7-8 years leading up to the purchase of that policy, we had eliminated almost all of our consumer debt minus the mortgage. So our shift in priorities at the time when we started, we couldn't rub two nickels together. You know, we were just trying to get to the end of the week. And so the two small policies we started that helped us build our cash and create the wind current that got us out of that consumer debt did its job. But now we have shifted mindsets to thinking more long-term from a, you know, shifting gears to financing the things in life, right? Step two, and then three, learning how to do things like dibs or, you know, passive income stuff. And so our mindset has definitely shifted in the 9 years we've been involved, almost 9 years in a few weeks.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about clients who their goal is passive income. One of the things we've been running into recently is with policies that are designed with a 40 base 60 PUA, we typically recommend fully funding both premiums for the first 4 years, but then starting the fifth year, decreasing or dropping off that PUA for a couple of reasons. One, depending on the age, health, a lot of different factors, we can start running into MEC issues, modified endowment contract or tax issues, if they continue to fund the PUA fully beyond that fourth year. That's something that we personally cannot, we have to work with the life insurance companies to determine where we are in that threshold.
Right.
So that was part of what got us thinking even more so of, okay, if you have a client who comes and really they're thinking about passive income and they're wanting to continue to fund the PUA beyond that fourth year. Well, what that means in turn is we have to shift our thinking in the design of the policy. We have to make it less aggressive for early cash value, right? Mike Kwong, you're really good at talking about that, those levers and those different things that as you're thinking about policies for clients, what are those factors that come into play for you?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, one of the things is the distinction of, you know, what these dollars that go towards PUA do versus what they do when they go through base premium, right? The PUA is a almost one-for-one, you know, injection of cash value. And that's great in the beginning when that's maybe your focus. But the base premium has many, you know, different benefits to the policy that don't show up in immediate cash value that first year, certainly, but does drive, you know, the death benefit. And that's the ultimate, you know, driver of the equity and the cash value over time. Also, you know, the dividends, right? The dividends kind of come each year, and that's also going to boost your cash value. But think of it like the shuttle, right? Remember, the base premium is your shuttle, right? Let's not get it twisted. The boosters are important and cool. They get that shuttle up there quick, right? Your PUA, but it's temporary, right? And it was never meant to, you know, run forever. Think of the boosters. If it stayed on the shuttle, it would drag it down once it's empty and it wouldn't be able to do what it does, you know? But the base is always there. It can't succeed until the shuttle comes back, you know, intact safely. So, yeah. And one thing too about, you know, the distinction is the long-term aspect of it. If you're thinking long-term, you're going to want to, you know, at least respect the base, at least not short shrift it. And understand that even with a 50-50, you're building that out for a more capacity. Think of it that way down the road. Both are going to grow over time. One's going to grow faster and then maybe, you know, fizzle out a little bit sooner with a more aggressive style. The other one may not be as exciting in the beginning, but it's going to carry comfortably. And the thing is, too, typically our situation is going to be where we get more and more income each year, especially those folks that are, you know, building passive income or want to in the future. You might as well set up a system that accommodates for that, right? And that can only be done when you respect the base and not short shrift it by going too small.
Yeah.
Well, and I'll add on to that from a different perspective. This is kind of where my brain went the other day when we talked a lot about PUA and potential meching of a policy because of, you know, overfunding, as Chris explained earlier. And just to Mike Kwong's, you know, statement earlier about respecting that relationship of the PUA to the base, right? And understanding it's, but my brain went back to the fact that there are no deals in life insurance, right? We are at the mercy of the insurance companies. Yes, we are manipulating these policies to fit a mold that is beneficial to us and our clients, right? And That's great. That's amazing that these companies that we work with are allowing us to have that flexibility, but they are still tied to things like the rule change of the 7702 a few years ago. And that shifted a lot of gears, right? In terms of how insurance companies manage paid up additions and all these extra riders. We've been in a 20-year interest depression, right? Yeah. That shifted cash value returns based on the returns of the company. All of them are stable. All of them are way better and solvent than anything we'd ever do in any other industry, but they're still affected, right? We're not completely immune to the realities of our economy. And so even within the life insurance, we're buffered a lot better, right? We have a lot more securities, and I go to bed at night not stressed out at all, but it does shift things. And so because our brain cannot, or we cannot predict what will happen in the future with any of these things, our job, and I think we do a really good job as a team, is making sure that we are doing the best possible for that client, which is why that dream conversation is important. That's why Mike's relationship with all of the Dibs, you know, family is so valuable, because we are absolutely on the side of the client's success, not just today, but in 10 years.
I'm reminded going, we started off with Nelson's principles, and I'm reminded as we go back through those, think long-term, capitalize generously, be an honest banker. None of that talks about life insurance. None of it talks about the ratios, yeah. None of it. In fact, if life insurance didn't exist, could you still apply Nelson's practices with your savings account, your checking account?
Absolutely. You could.
It wouldn't be as efficient, right? That's why he went to life insurance. It's the most efficient tool we know of at this point to use for banking.
It's also an and asset.
Right. The principles that Nelson taught are foundational to all of this. And what that makes me think is infinite banking is more of a way of life. And Nelson told us that it's more of a way of life. It's not really having to do with what the life insurance company is doing. It's not really having to do with dividends. It's not really having to do with ratios. It's more of how you think, and it's a way of life. Mm-hmm. And I just did a quick little scan through Becoming Your Own Banker. And as we wrap up, I wanted to share this. So Nelson gives 6 different examples of illustrations in the book. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the ratio of base to PUA is anywhere from 32 base to 68 PUA. That's his most aggressive. But he also does a 60 base, 40 PUA. 60 base, 40 PUA. So he's run the full gamut of the examples in his book, from super aggressive. In no cases does he add a term rider. I will say that. Mm. Okay. And I would personally not put a term rider on my own policies if I can at all avoid it. I do actually have one from my very, very early policies that has a term rider on it. But I probably would do that differently today just based on new information. So yeah, like the example, he gives the example of the All-American having 5 uses of an automobile. That one was a 60 base, 40 PUA. He put $3,030 in the base and just under $2,000 in the PUA. Mm-hmm. Interesting. That was on an age 21 person.
Yeah.
Okay. In the equipment financing, this was a 30-year-old person. And he put 37% in the base and 63%, but only funded it for 4 years. Interesting. With the example of the grandparents and even distribution of age classes, he put 30% in the base and 70% in the PUA. But this was on an age 0. This was on an infant.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't even know if we could get that ratio on an infant today.
Yeah, to be honest. Probably not.
Yeah, because he was able to fund all of that for 22 years, which how often when we're doing young kids, we usually run the PUA out to 20, 21, 22. A different look at the monetary value of college degree. This was an 18-year-old student. This is on page 79. And the ratio was 32 base, 68 PUA. So more aggressive on that one. Funded it for 4 years. Suzy Q student, also 18 years old, same ratio. And then the last one, what if I'm uninsurable? They insured their 23-year-old Jill, and that was a 50-50 split, and they funded it for 20 years, both base and PUA. So I think it's interesting to go back to Nelson's examples. He didn't show just one example. It depended on the circumstances. And just like us, I'm sure Nelson learned over his career, you know, the different levers you can use and pull to apply to different people's situations. So just in summing up, the PUA is a tool, right? It's one of those levers we can pull in the design, and that is based on what the client tells us their goals are in our conversations, whether that's in our consult, whether it's in our dream conversation examples. Mike Kwong, I think I remember you have policies that you've designed 50-50, right?
Sure. Especially the later ones, you know, once, you know, the cash values kind of grown into the older ones, then the later ones, I can really optimize, right? I can afford to do that with, you know.
And with those, you can continue to fund the PUA longer, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, because you are putting more into the base, that is also increasing the death benefit that comes from that. So that's another factor we have to take into consideration when we're talking about capacity of human life value, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So again, it the nuances, we can pull all these different levers, but it really has to do with our way of thinking and how we're using these tools. And Mike Crawford, I think I heard you say your more recent policies you've looked at and done are more 50-50 splits as well.
Yeah, much more 50-50 or even maybe 45 base, 55 PUA. Again, flop that, reverse it. 55 base, because again, this goes back to what you just said. Some clients don't have the space in their human life value. I do. So I'm now looking at policies that are slightly more aggressively base focused, and the PUA will help me have the cash early, but I don't need as much. I want it to look different in 10 years, 15 years than it would if I built it, 60% base, 40% paid up addition.
So you're de-emphasizing this. This first part isn't as important to you. You're really looking at building a pool of cash.
Yeah.
You're looking at potential passive income, and I'm guessing you're also looking at legacy, and that is the death benefit.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good stuff. Any final comments from either of you on this topic? Those wheels are spinning. You both are coming in off of travel. So thanks for joining and sharing this information. To our listeners, we really hope this is helpful. I know just as a teacher, having a background in education, we threw out a lot of vocabulary. And so if you're not familiar with some of those vocabulary terms, we probably lost you. So go back and research those terms. You can go back into the back of Nelson's book. He has a glossary where it talks about paid up addition riders, talks about dividends, talks about all those different things. Or set up a consult with one of us. Mm-hmm. We would be more than happy to talk about this stuff more specifically to your situation and maybe revisit some of these terms and how they apply for the goals that you have. So, Mike, thanks for joining. Appreciate it. To our listeners, thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Life Success Legacy podcast. Check us out at our website, lifesuccesslegacy.com. For upcoming webinars, boot camps. We've got several different books on there. Check us out, like us, download all the stuff that Crawford tells me we should encourage people to do, right?
Yep.
All right. Until next time, thanks for joining us. We'll see you then.